CBS and the world. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're staying on the surface of the planet Earth to observe the ISS, the International Space Station. It's a reliable friend, passes overhead now and again. You can catch it as if it's a shooting star. But within these last days, enormous drama on the International Space Station. Drama to the point of we could do a miniseries here because this is about Roscosmos, which is a partner in the ISS with the United States. And yet, Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, is here to help us understand how things went so wrong so quickly and how lucky we are that we still have an ISS. Bob, a very good evening to you. All right, too much drama. What is NAUKA, and what does this tell us about our partners at the ISS, the Roscosmos?
Well, John, first I'm going to segue to a thank you to your listeners who my July fundraising campaign is over, and I have to once again thank your listeners for their great generosity in supporting my website, Behind the Black, in both donations and subscriptions. I really appreciate it. It keeps me from starving, and I really do appreciate it. But all right, what is NAUKA? NAUKA is the first large module that the Russians have launched to ISS in more than a decade, and it was 14 years behind schedule, more than a quarter century in construction, and it docked with ISS last week, and then shortly thereafter, its engines turned on totally on its own, and they reported some things like it made the station rotate about 45 degrees, and they got it back in position. Well, we've got more recent news. It apparently shook up ISS much more than first revealed. It didn't rotate the station only 45 degrees. It literally rotated it 1.5 rotations, about 540 degrees. And they had to actually literally do a 180-degree forward flip to get it back into its original orientation. So it rotated around completely, a complete rotation, then another half rotation. That's a big deal. And it also appears that NAUKA was not only firing its engines out of control on its own, but it was also trying to separate itself from ISS to undock. Third, it appears that the Russians had no way to stop the engines. They started to fire engines on both a Russian Progress freighter as well as on their Zvezda module to try to compensate for what NAUKA was doing rather than just simply shutting its engines down. I should point out that firing the engines on the Zvezda module is a concern because that module is 20 years old and has stress fracture problems, so you don't want to do that. It's leaking. It appears the only reason those engines stopped is because it ran out of fuel. This is really a significant big deal because, in conversation me and you were having, John, last week after my report, when a similar thing occurred on Gemini 8 back in the 60s, a thruster started to fire and they couldn't control it. It was right after a docking, so the docked capsule and its target were spinning in space faster and faster, and they were on the verge of breaking up, which would have killed the two astronauts on board. Fortunately, Neil Armstrong was the commander, and he quickly, calmly got that vehicle back into position and was able to get the thruster turned off. But it would have broken that craft up and killed the astronauts. It got him his lunar landing because he did that so well. Well, this applies to ISS. If that rotation had continued, if NAUKA had not run out of fuel, we might have seen ISS start breaking up. In fact, the flight director who reported these details pointed out that he was incredibly relieved when the rotation stopped and the solar panels were still and the radiators that are on ISS were still on the station. He was very concerned that this rotation would have thrown them off. So this was a big, big, big deal, John. It was much more than they originally announced.
Do they have a transcript of the communication from ISS to the ground control? Can we read that? Are they producing this?
Yes. that we have that information, and we can listen in, and so NASA's got all that. But the real issue is what caused this, and now we get into a further dirt. Right after this happened, Russia's officials offered two different explanations off the cuff about why those engines fired. Their flight director, he blamed the incident on a short-term software failure. Because of the failure, a direct command to turn on the lab's engines was mistakenly implemented. Roscosmos director Dmitry Rogozin, he later that day gave a different reason. He said human factors may have been at play. Quote, there was such euphoria after NASA successfully docked with the space station, people relaxed to some extent. Perhaps one of our operators didn't take into account that the control system of the block, that's NACA, will continue to adjust itself in space, and it determined a moment 3 hours after docking and turned on its engines. Now, neither of these explanations were put forth after any investigation. None at all. They're just thrown off offhand, and they conflict with each other. They really don't explain anything. Which was it? Human error? Was it a software programming error? Or was it both? We really don't know. And in fact, the offhanded manner in which these Russian officials put this stuff forth demonstrates to me that there is a real fundamental, the real fundamental cause is the terrible, sloppy, error-prone quality control systems at Roscosmos and all the aerospace companies that it controls now since the Putin administration consolidated Russia's entire aerospace industry into that single government-run corporation. This is not a partner we should trust. And, you know, they are very clearly not very clear about what they're doing. And, you know, their failures keep happening now repeatedly. They've had launch aborts. They've had launch failures. They have had corruption in contracting. They've had corruption in engine construction. They've had simple sabotage. You remember the drill hole in a Soyuz capsule that caused a leak. They've had mistakes, errors, poor planning, and simple dishonesty on every level. And the thing is, they don't appear to really care to investigate this stuff closely. I can thank God Americans no longer have to fly on a Soyuz capsule to get up there, but we still have one American on board that has to come home on a Soyuz capsule. It's not good. I cannot wait until we can end this partnership with Russia. The sooner the better.
Bob, what Roscosmos evidences is the way of business for Russia. I mean, this is ordinary.
It's
okay. We say it's good enough for government work. Let's say it's good enough for Russian government work.
Yeah, there's no real difference.
The partnership here is the decision, not the behavior of Roscosmos, because they're a successful organization with higher probability of trouble of trouble than we tolerate.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we're kind of stuck with them on ISS for the next few years, but the less we have to depend on them on ISS, the better. And unfortunately, we will be depending on them for keeping ISS operational until it's over with, or at least until Axiom, the private company, gets some of its modules in orbit, because there are certain things that we depend on the Russian modules that those Axiom modules will replace.
All right, let's come back to Washington. GAO is weighing into a fistfight between Blue Origin and SpaceX. Who's going to win, Bob?
Well, we already know who's won. The GAO last week, late on Friday, you know, when the news won't be picked up that much, it announced that it rejected the protests by both Blue Origin and Dynetics over the Luna Lander contract award to SpaceX, the manned Luna Lander. SpaceX had won that contract. Both Blue Origin and Dynetics protested it, saying there were reasons why they should have had a better chance, or there should have been a second contract awarded. And the GAO basically said hogwash. Those are trivial complaints, and they're not important, and it doesn't matter. And so what this means is that NASA can probably now proceed with the contract, and for SpaceX, it can begin working on the upgrades it will need to add to Starship to make it a lunar lander. Now, those actually, I wouldn't call them trivial, but the big work at Starship is going on anyway from private funding. And so what SpaceX is able to do was, to win this contract, was saying, well, we'll make some changes to Starship to make it a lunar lander. And NASA said, you know, that's a really good deal. It costs less, and we'll take it.
The question, Bob. There's a photograph of 29 Raptor engines mounted on Super Heavy, number 4. Is that the largest rocket ever produced in the solar system without it firing? Does that represent more power than we've ever seen?
Yes, to a certain extent. The Russians' N1 rocket from the 1960s had about the same number of engines. I think it had 33 engines. Of course, it never launched successfully. Their plumbing wasn't good, and it always blew up on the, like, 3 or 4 launches it tried to do. What SpaceX is building with Super Heavy number 4, that's the 4th prototype, is they've assembled 29 engines at the base as a test for use in that first orbital test flight with Starship. They are pushing forward aggressively towards getting that launch going. So the 29 engines at the base will fuel the first stage, Super Heavy, and then the Starship will be Starship number 20 will be stacked on top of that, and that will do the near orbital flight from Boca Chica, Texas, to near Hawaii. In all ways, it appears SpaceX is pushing really, really hard to get this orbital flight off as quickly as possible. I had predicted they wouldn't get it off in July like they were first targeting, and they didn't. But right now, I think the odds are pretty high that they're going to make that launch occur sometime between, I'm predicting sometime in late September, early October. Super Heavy with those 29 engines, it's fully stacked. It's complete. It's now a question of whether they're going to move it to the orbital launch pad, which is almost complete, or they'll move it to their suborbital test pad, which they've used for Starship for further testing. They could do either. They've got to do static fire tests with it. But if they move it to the orbital pad, they can stack Starship on top of it sooner. And so that's what I think is going to happen. They'll do static fire tests. They'll get Starship stacked. They'll do further tests. They'll do tank tests. And that'll put them in the position to actually launch the thing. And yes, John, when it launches, it will be the most powerful rocket that ever launched. And it will be, I think, more powerful than SLS.
This is a James Webb Space Telescope story. It looks like it's about a rocket, but it's in fact about James Webb Space Telescope, which, if there was ever a NASA project that had a Jonah on board, that's old fashioned for bad luck. It's the James Webb. Now, Bob and I have been running an informal competition for several years now. Which one will launch last? That's the winner here. Is it James Webb or is it SLS? Right now, I can't tell, Bob, because Ariana Space is back in business. Does that advance James Webb so that it'll launch before SLS and therefore SLS will win?
Yeah, that's where we are right now. Ariane Space had not done any launches of its Ariane 5 rocket for almost a year because there were issues suddenly discovered of vibrations when they released the fairings that protected the payload. And they spent a year trying to fix that. And so last week, they finally completed the first Ariane launch in almost a year. And why that affects Webb is because as part of the barter agreement with the Europeans, whereby they get telescope time in exchange for providing the launch on Ariane 5, they can't launch Webb until this problem was fixed. And now Ariane 5 has launched. They need to do one more launch in September to test again how the fairing repair worked. And if that works as well as this launch worked, they will then tentatively scheduled sometime in November, launch the James Webb telescope. Now, November, if they launch the Webb telescope in November, it's going to be a really neck-and-neck race with SLS, John, because right now NASA's pushing hard to get SLS up in November as well. These two could launch right on that.
Right, that's why we go to the racetrack, Bob. Bob Zimmerman, yeah. He keeps the website Behind the Black. When we come back, Apollo stories. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.